Yeah, I think just the funding that did come in was really great. I think the action and the continuity of all of these, you know, the coalition from Prop S to Prop E went from 40 organizations to 140 organizations. That was something that was huge. However, right after that passed, the Arts Alliance that led these meetings that were laying out the path for people stopped hosting these meetings right as the pandemic hit. And so all of that coordination, all of that togetherness, I feel like that singular voice that we had built together kind of dissipated and people went back to corners a little bit.
Welcome to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. We introduce you to the voices of community thought leaders and change makers working on solutions facing our fellow community members, nonprofits, small businesses, neighborhoods, cities, and our region. This episode is part of our special series on how the arts and culture sector is coming back from the COVID-19 pandemic and features voices from the co-production of Arts for a Better Bay Area State of the Arts Summit held at the Strand Theater in San Francisco on June 28, 2023. The focus of the summit was on rebuilding our communities through the arts.
So I think the advantages of having a small group is that we have a real conversation, right? And everyone's probably somewhere different in their Proposition E journey, right? Super happy that Denise has agreed to be a part of our circle.
Yay!
Yay! And my co-Proposition E
co-captain,
Vinay. My name is Joe Landini. I'm the founder of Safe House Arts and also one of the stewards with ABBA, which is Arts for a Better Bay Area. We're one of the organizations that helped steer Proposition S and then Proposition E. And there's a lot of questions around that. And now I'm going to invite Vinay to introduce himself.
Hi, everyone. I know most of you, so it's kind of odd. My name is Vinay Patel, and I am the executive director of the Asian Pacific Islander Cultural Center. I also work with Bindlestiff Studios and Asian Improv Arts. And I've been doing arts administration and advocacy for over now 20 years. And at a time, I was the really, really young guy. And now 12. I'm that really, really old guy.
He was 12.
I was 12 then, yes. And then to my left, you can't believe how ecstatic I am having Denise here, you know, to sit in with us. When I thought there is no, you know, a person from any of these departments willing to come up here and sit. And she's like, I'll come. I'm like, wow. So Denise, I'll let you introduce yourself from the Arts Commission.
Okay, I'm Denise Pate. I'm the Director of Community Investments for the San Francisco Arts Commission. It's a long title that means I just manage all the people that manage all the people that manage the grants program. So, you know, and I'm also, it's just been a year and a half since I've been at the commission. And so I'm learning a lot about Prop E too. So like, you know, that before you guys can fill in the history and all that. And
we're
administering the funds and getting ready to reevaluate how they were used and what happened. And I understand there was like some controversy and things like that.
Oh yeah, we're going to whip it out. Controversy. We're going to whip it out.
And I missed it because by the time I came, it was all calmed down. So I thought, so thank you.
And we're a small group, so would you guys pull in, come in? I think we should pass the mic around and everyone introduce themselves. Zach, such a handsome man.
Oh, geez, knock that off. So, hi, I'm Zachary. I am with ODC and Oomph Dance Theater, and I'm going to pass the mic. Pronouns, they, he.
Hi, my name is Vin Seaman. I use they, them pronouns. I'm an interdisciplinary artist and the director of Diamond Wave. We're a queer arts organization. And I was also a community organizer for the Yes on E campaign in 2018. Oh, God, that was a while ago.
All right.
So, Vinay and I have plans for like a little tutorial introduction to Proposition E.
Yes.
So we're going to do this as sort of a dialogue, right?
Yeah, we're going to do it as a dialogue. I think one of the things that we want, hopefully, everyone takes away from, you know, the dialogue we're going to be having is that, you know, the opportunities that you see around you, whether or not they're small or you think they're large, whatever, in terms of, you know, public support for the arts, that in San Francisco has always been, you know, started by the idea it's from the community. And from the community, I mean, people in this room, there are people in this room that made it possible that there's money that, you know, from the government going to the arts. And so this is a little bit of a story dialogue because, you know, Joe and I were both involved in it. Kevin was heavily involved in it, trying to get, more public support for the arts, And so part of this, a little bit of a history, but also at the end of it, we want you to feel empowered. These are your dollars. These are promises made to you, and therefore you should feel empowered to speak up, about it. So in the end, hopefully, that's where we end up.
In the beginning. In the beginning, there was, guys, everyone knows what Grants for the Arts is for the most part. Yeah, everyone's pretty clear on that. So in the beginning, Grants for the Arts was attached to the hotel tax fund, which meant that a percentage of the hotel tax went directly into grants that were made by Grants for the Arts.
Grants for the Arts. Well, there was a fund, and there was either it was by a vote to the public or it was in the charter or something on how the hotel tax was supposed to be spent. And so it was very specific, right? And so fast forward, and that's what happened over the years was that the Board of Supervisors, through just a regular ordinance where they vote, in their chambers every year, say, we're going to reallocate some of these dollars and spend it this way and spend it this way. And so that hotel tax ended up starting to fund lots of different things, and including programs over at the Arts Commission. And that included, cultural centers, and they included cultural equity grants and things like that over at the Arts Commission too. But in 2004, there was a lawsuit, and that lawsuit, was about parking meter fees, of all things. But that had a wide impact, and the city started going, wait a second, what the judgment was that if you went to the voters and said you were going to spend tax dollars this way, you have to spend tax dollars only that way. And so because the city was actually, and I think we're past the statute of limitations, so we can talk about this. But because the city was actually over ordinance, just changing all those allocations, they started saying we can't. So they pulled all those dollars from the Arts Commission and Grants for the Arts out, and put them in general fund. And that's almost death sentence. If you're in general fund, that means like wherever the wind blows that year in terms of the budget, you're susceptible to it, as this year, right? And one of the things under the hotel tax, there was a provision of, no matter what happens in the city budget, you cannot go 10% lower from the previous year, and you can't go 10% higher than the previous year of your allocation. So there was a floor and ceiling that always protected us in the arts. But when after, 2004 or 2006 or something like that, they pulled us out, we did not have those safeguards anymore. That means that everybody was kind of, every year had to go and fight to make sure that there's enough money in those two departments,
So at that point, you had a bunch of stressed out artists. Okay. Everyone's up to speed, right? Yeah. Okay. Moving forward, we move on to the year 2018.
Yes.
We've gone through the banking recession of 2008.
The dot-com burst.
2010?
Yeah.
So artists are really stressed out. Okay, so we get to 2017, and we start organizing Proposition S. 2016.
Yeah.
Proposition S, which then was one of the spearheaders. And we failed miserably.
No, we didn't. No, we didn't.
My version is so much more interesting.
Your version is always darker than what they are. Vin, you want to talk?
Okay, the real version. There we go. Right. Vin will tell you the truth.
Thank you. So in 2016, the Arts Alliance, with support from a huge coalition of other organizations, created a Prop S, which was in line with a coalition on homelessness. It was taking these issues of arts and homelessness, putting them together as two core issues for our city. And that legislation, I think, missed passing by like 3%, 4%, something like that. Needed two-thirds to pass. That's not damn miserably. There was other bigger failures on that election cycle in 2016.
Jay. Yeah, that wasn't the biggest gut punch that night.
But also, I think from that legislation as well, that legislation took a big portion of the hotel tax fund in a way that worried city administrators and other agencies that also drew upon that fund. So in 2017, Prop S 2.0 happened, which was the same coalition. It fizzled out. It didn't work. It didn't happen. 2018, we came back with Prop E, which was really a city-led effort, from my understanding. It was folks met with city officials, said, hey, we want you to lead this proposition. We want this to be in line with what you think arts funding should be. We don't want to ask for more than our fair share. So it was a lot less than Prop S, but it was still a huge windfall for San Francisco arts, and specifically because it reconnected that hotel tax fund directly with arts funding. So, you know, nobody knew the pandemic would happen. So it's like short of like an earthquake, we would just continue to grow and grow and grow. Nobody knew this other thing would be coming. How's that for a little cat?
That is great. And, you know, one of the things that was the catalyst for Arts Group to get together, and Arts Alliance, you know, at the time was a collection of the largest budgetist arts organizations in San Francisco. So they had quite a bit of, you know.
The Arts Alliance, the entity Alliance that still exists and does lobbying and has a lobbyist within the
state. So they came to, and now that everyone's in the general fund, we're all kind of in the same boat. And that actually, you know, people got together from both sides because, you know, the smaller cultural organizations were kind of at odds with City Hall being in between, you know, of the interests of the larger organizations and the smaller ones and the individual artists. But we saw an opportunity to work together to try to bring this back. And we worked really hard to come up with equitable plans. Like, it was not going to be business as usual if we were to come back and put the money back into this. So a lot of community members got together. We had a lot of discussions and meetings and dialogues and fights about, you know, what it's going to look like, you know, and it can't be the way that it was. If we're going to do it, we got to do something that we feel was going to have a more lasting impact, you know, than, you know, where we had been. So that was a very interesting time. We've never sat together. I've never sat in the, you know, in the offices of the San Francisco Symphony and things like that. So, but again, that was community-led effort, you know, and Prop S didn't have City Hall support, but we still got 63%. But when we came back for Prop E, City Hall came to us and said, look, if you work with us on the language, we will sponsor it and save you some effort. And because they knew that we were stronger, Prop E time around, we were stronger then. And so we had decided to, it was going to be a smaller chunk that we're going to take, but we're going to have City Hall support behind it.
All right. So that leads us to at this point, Proposition E has passed, and that spawned the birth of the
Cultural Services Allocation Plan.
Arts
Impact Endowment by the Cultural Services Allocation Plan. But one thing that Prop E has, so everyone just kind of knows what it actually funds. So Prop E funds all of grants for the arts. Their whole budget is within grants for the arts. In Arts Commission, they have a mixed funding over there. And Denise can talk a little bit more about it too. But from whatever, but what comes out of Prop E are, you know, it funds cultural equity grants. It funds cultural centers, and it funds the Arts Impact Endowment or the Cultural Service this plan. I forget the full name of that one. CESP or
Cultural Services Allocation Plan or CSAP.
CSAP.
I talked about this stuff on the campaign trail for like months. So this is why it's all burned and etched.
So that's why you said that I can't remember.
Also, Vinay, for cultural districts that are funded through the Office of Economic and Workforce Development, mm-hmm. I believe as well.
No, Mayor's Office of Community Development.
Thank you. Mayor's Office of Community Development supports a pool of funding for all of the different cultural districts throughout the city as well.
Okay. So let's take a deep breath. That was a lot of information. So, and some of you are probably asleep. So,
I'd like to know what percentage of the hotel tax, which is 14%, hotel tax is 14%, goes to grants for the arts. I'm sorry. Like, I just, that brass tack.
That's a good question. Does anyone know? So we may have to get back to you on that one.
Let's see. I don't think I have a percentage of it. And the percentage is, you know, what I do know is when Grants for the Arts was put back into the hotel tax, and that percentage varies depending how large the hotel tax is, you know, like, you know, how, you know, the larger the tax, the, you know, the percentage is different. But what we had done at the time was try to set a baseline. What the city asked, give us what your baseline is. And so, you know, a lot of creative accounting tried to make that baseline as big as possible. So I'll tell you that when Grants for the Arts was put back into the hotel tax through Prop E, it was $16.3 million that was put back in, you know, which was a bump, you know, to what they had.
Okay. So we've covered a lot of ground. Where do you want to go next, Vinay? That's all I got.
That's all you got.
Well, a lot of the things. Well, actually, someone had a question. So, yeah.
So something I'm kind of hearing from you, Vin, is that there's a lack of transparency right now with the hotel tax fund and what's going, like, what is the percentage? What are these brass tax things? And I'm just wondering, does anybody here, and it can be our wonderful panelists or anybody else know, or especially with Grants for the Arts, they've had a complete changeover of staff in the last 2 years. And so, and what they used to have are these docket meetings where the community was allowed in to get to see decisions and get to see the advisory group make those decisions in real time around who is being funded and why. And so I'm raising this not if anybody knows of any transparency, such as a final, like an annual report or a breakdown of grantees. Like, it's just, I'm sensing a lack of transparency and that's troubling. And I just want to raise that. And if anybody has any information.
Well, that's a really good segue.
Well, just to be the professor here again about this stuff, just one more point, and then I think that we're going to go the rest of the time talking about what's happened, what's going on. And Denise can talk about, you know, the programs over the Arts Commission as well. But one of the things that what happened right after we hit the pandemic immediately, right? You know, like we're all celebrating and everything's going to be great. The tourism was on a sky high. We were going to see a 10% bump every year, but that was going to be fantastic. We were on cloud nine, right? But the pandemic hit and we had written in a 10% floor and ceiling, and it was done by the city attorney. We thought it was ironclad. And then all of a sudden we hear, oh, there's no such thing as a floor. There's no money. There's no money. And basically we're right back at the general fund again. That's pretty much what it was, you know? And so we had to go back in there and start advocating, right? And so a lot of people were advocating again, like, hey, this cannot be what's going on here. And we have a mayor that's, you know, comes from the arts, understood that. And so what City Hall ended up doing was what they call backfill. They found other money and they filled it. So what that didn't do was fulfill the promise of the 10% floor. It just said, hey, we're just going to come and try to salvage what's going on over here, right? So that ever since the pandemic, we have not had enough funds in the hotel tax. And is that how you understand it too, Denise? No? Okay. But City Hall and the supervisors have been backfilling to make sure that we don't, you know, have that. And so, and we actually saw a bump, I think, last year. The mayor was able to put a bump into it. So we didn't in the arts, I think the first year there was a slight decrease in the funding for the arts. But since then, the supervisors have been backfilling it. And in this year, they said that the hotel tax is going to be level in terms of, and then there might not be need for backfilling. There's enough funds in the hotel tax for it. So Denise?
Well, in terms of the hotel tax, I don't know what's going on at Chance for the Arts. I mean, I do. We work a little bit with them in their transition. I worked with them on their guidelines and we worked with figuring out a scenario, kind of like the same. Actually, Jason, who was there before, actually started that. Kind of like the Robin Hood kind of scenario, took from the larger organization so that the smaller organizations could have an entry point, like the $10,000 grants. And so we worked on it, but the challenge was, I'm the Arts Commission person. We have the cultural equity. We have this transparency and then the Grants for the Arts, which is a different organization. So I helped them to write guidelines. And then also we hired a program officer to help them work on grant, you know, reviewing the grants. And right now I'm reading grants for the arts, a small portion of them. And what we're doing is we're helping to advise them on creating a rubric that focuses more on community engagement. And so it's really a strange marriage. And it's, because it's still Grants for the Arts, the symphony, the opera, the ballet, and then also some smaller organizations. Whereas we're this like really groovy, you know, cultural equity, and we're looking at inclusion all the time, and we're transparent. And so when you were talking about that there was no meeting, you couldn't see what was going on. So anyway, but in terms of like the hotel tax fund, but what I was told with budget this time that the Arts Commission, we're in good shape. And I was told that the hotel tax was the only tax that's growing, despite all the talk about that, you know, the tourists are scared away, and that the fund, and I looked at each year and the growth that's happening. And so we're good. And we have an increase. But of course we have multiple funds that's coming to the Arts Commission, but property is good. And we have money left over last year. And so that we'll, you know, move forward to the next year. But I'll just say this, you didn't ask, but in the CSAP process, I happen to have been there, part of the steering committee or whatever you call that committee where we all got together and talked about the buckets of money, like arts ed, capital and space, core support, and individual artists. And the team decided like what percentage of Prop E would go towards those types of program needs. And for this year, we did Arts Impact Endowment, and we did a first-time grantee initiative. Now, I knew about the other ones the years before and the controversy around that, but this time we just focused on first-time grantees, which we had a time because it's like, what is a first-time grantee? Can you appear if you were with the organization, can you appear as an individual now, even though you got a grant as the leader of an organization?
No, they wouldn't let me.
And there were all kinds of things going on. But what we found is the CSAP plan said that only a small percentage would go to individual artists, but that was the largest amount of applications that we got. And we still had to say only we gave like 4 individual artists. And then the largest was the arts education, and we hardly got any applications in that category. So we had money left over, and we were like, can we just reallocate it? And it was like, no, that was CSAP. The CSAP said that, you know, these are the buckets. And so we had to follow the CSAP. So that's why we had money left over in some categories. So as we get ready to, we submitted the RFP, we posted the RFP for the consultant that will do the evaluation of this last 5 years.
Exactly.
And then we go plan for the next CSAP process. I'm wondering, you know, I'm concerned about what comes up because what the actual need was different from what we saw in the CSAP.
Oh, that's a lot. Okay. So we're at 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. So it's built in that there has to be an evaluation at 5 years. The Arts Commission is hiring an outside consultant to do the evaluation. They're going to get paid a range of what, 60 to 90, something like that?
90.
So you should apply for it.
Not to exceed 90.
Exceed 90.
Oh, wait, it was 50 at first and nobody applied. And so we had to post it again, and we went up. I had to go get more money, and we went back up. So this, you know, anyway.
But Zach, circling back to your question, I think you bring up a really important point, which there has been a real struggle with transparency, and it has felt sometimes city government hasn't heard us when we've asked for more transparency. So I think that ABBA is an advocacy organization, and that's why we're all here. We're supposed to be doing advocacy. So these kinds of questions are really important because we can gather these questions and look at them and present them to Ralph and Valley and say, this is what your constituents are asking for, right? Okay, so let's do some questions because that was a lot of information. Lawrence.
So I'm curious, what constitutes the definition for arts education? So, I'm wondering if the definition is broad enough for to have enough applicants, or maybe it's too narrow. So I don't know. I'm asking. So what constitutes arts education that would be applicable?
Learning. Let's see. I'm not the arts ed person, program officer, but I thought that people ask the question all the time. Could it be adults also? Are you just talking about children? I have an arts ed program officer that went out because we have other arts ed grants, and you asked if they were interested in the funding. They weren't interested in that funding. Also, sometimes a grant program, we think it's great. It's that it's put together really well and it serves the needs. And then we don't get enough applications in. And you asked a very good question, because there has been a time when something came out and we said, we thought it was good, and they said, that's too much work for that size grant. Mm. It doesn't make sense. We don't do that anymore. And so we had to reevaluate. And so, which is what we will do this next time.
The reason I ask this mm-hmm. is because some organizations, some funders make a distinction between arts exposure, mm-hmm. like doing assemblies for elementary schools mm-hmm. and hands-on education. And I think that that's maybe where that, I don't know. That's
we told people to self-identify. They decided that this was arts and that fit in this category. We decided not to pick and choose like that. So people self-identified, this is an arts education program. I mean, it couldn't be like something totally outside of that, but we had a lot of leeway in that.
Okay.
I don't want to get too far off on a tangent, but a quick question. I know, does ODC or Dance Mission apply for that funding?
The majority of arts education money in the city comes out of DCYF mm-hmm. and Department of Children, Youth, and Their Families. They're getting ready. There's another year inside of this trajectory. It was a 5-year grant, and they'll be doing an RFP in October. Mm-hmm. So, and those grants are actually very hefty and kind of support the basis of your program. So if you can get one of those, you're in the money.
Prop 28 money that got voted in. And so now all the public schools are getting money for the arts. And so that's coming up in August, September. And so 80% of it's going to artists into the schools or into the not artists, but schools. And then 20% is going for materials and all that stuff. So people are very excited and kind of waiting with bated breath.
We only have, we got the 5-minute symbol.
Oh, we did.
2 minutes ago. So, but I, go ahead.
I know.
So this probably be our last
question. Well, I guess to bring it back, the concept was to talk about Proposition E and its having passed. And as a person who was not in the region when that happened, I'd love to hear from anyone in the room who'd like to brag about the upside of this proposition and what it is good at or for, if anyone has anything good to say about it. I promise I wasn't in the area. I don't have any skin in this.
My organization benefited, Safe House for the Arts mm-hmm. and the Tenderloin. They were super generous to us. So
the intention of the bill was to access the hotel tax to a greater extent and extend mm-hmm. it across the larger part of the community. Is that I came to the session to learn more about this proposition and its intention and also some of its failures is also part of every act that we live with in any municipal setting. But I wanted to hear some excitement or any kind of like, did it get close to accomplishing what it was intended to do, what the voters voted on?
I would like one of you to talk about was it hijacked into some other part of the budget and it actually never did realize its original goals?
Was it hijacked into something else?
Yeah.
I don't think it was hijacked into something else. I think it got cratered. You know, and that posed a whole new set of the problems in terms of the pandemic and the loss of hotel tax revenue, right? It just happened at that moment, right? It lost momentum. And I do want to say a lot of great things happened. One, the community got together, said we have a voice in City Hall around the arts that we never had before. Secondly, it broadened what support for the arts meant. Cultural districts got funded. Arts education came into the fold. Cultural service organizations came into the fold to be able to, you know, get funding. And so I think that those are a lot of great things too.
Yeah, I think just the funding that did come in was really great. I think the action and the continuity of all of these, you know, the coalition from Prop S to Prop E went from 40 organizations to 140 organizations. That was something that was huge. However, right after that passed, the Arts Alliance that led these meetings that were laying out the path for people stopped hosting these meetings right as the pandemic hit. And so all of that coordination, all of that togetherness, I feel like that singular voice that we had built together kind of dissipated and people went back to corners a little bit. And the other thing that I want to speak to as well is the cultural services allocation plan. When the Arts Impact Endowment was first imagined, the idea was that we would create grant programs that would be in place and have a chance to prove their worth for 5 years. However, when the cultural services allocation plan came up, it was in such a state of rushedness to get it done according to the bureaucracy of the city that they created a very vague plan that had these different buckets that Denise was speaking to. And I would say it's probably actually fortunate that during the pandemic, there was flexibility within those funds to adapt and to react to what was going on. However, from my understanding of what happened in meetings when it was created, it was the intention of the Arts Impact Endowment and the Cultural Services Allocation Plan said, we want to create these specific grant programs for 5 years so they have a chance to grow and see what the impact is in community. And then we revisit that in 5 years to see if we want to change that. I think what we've ended up with is the Cultural Services Allocation Plan being this overarching, we think these are the general buckets and those programs change every year. And I think in a way that the Arts Commission can't anticipate what the community needs if we're shifting and changing every year. Mm-hmm. The last thing that I want to say is just around the next Cultural Services Allocation Plan is I want to advocate for an entire year of, what if we spent an entire year of Arts Impact Endowment funding, training our community on facilitation and togetherness, giving people stipends to come together through democratic processes to talk about what we need on an artist level, on a culture bearer level, on an arts worker level. That it's not about executive directors and policymakers, but we're reaching out and doing the work and training artists to help us come up with the next cultural services allocation plan.
I kind of wanted to speak a little bit about what we do at SF Travel because we are the tourism board. And I'm the arts person, so I'm trying to make sure to try and figure out how to put as much money as possible into this fund. And I realize, you know, we had 65% layoffs at the SF Travel Tourism Board during the pandemic. And I know everybody felt a ton of pain. But what we had the opportunity to do was start doing campaigns, and campaigns funded by hotels, which are not funded by grants for the arts, right? So the hotels started coming in and saying, okay, we'll take a chance on this because they didn't have anything else going on to promote the city, right? And so we started to prove ourselves, and we've been doing campaigns and promoting and marketing the city through the arts. And my job is to also partly connect visitors with arts organizations and artists. And that's what I try to do. And please, if you want to reach out to me, my email is brendat@sftravel.com. And I'm always trying, and I love ODC so much, by the way, and many of the organizations that have spoken today. So we're trying to make sure that that rises. And just to let you know, it is going up. We have APEC coming in the fall, November, which is a huge opportunity, but it is going up and up and up. 24, we're a little bit worried about because we've lost some conventions. So that's a concern, but 25, 26, 27, and I realize a whole year is brutal. But, you know, we're really looking at some great opportunities in the future, and my colleagues are working really hard. So I am the person that promotes the arts through the tourism board, and I'd love to try and help any way I can.
Hey, thank you.
All right, guys. So thank you so much for participating in this really dense conversation. Everyone is going to be downstairs at the reception, so we'll all be here. So if you have questions for us, please feel free to find Vin.
No, but please walk away. Please walk away knowing that, you know, there's a lot more information out there. There'll be a resource page on ABBA's website for more information on Proppy. Please keep an eye out for things that happen. If you have questions about it, you can go directly to the Arts Commission. They're all wonderful people that are willing to listen to you and answer questions, you know, same thing with Grants for the Arts. And then you can also advocate to your supervisors. They will listen. You know, if you say, hey, we need more money inside Arts Commission's Cultural Equity Grants Program, they will have to listen to you.
Also, the CSAP process will be starting later this year. Probably, no, not later this year. Things take longer to say, like next year. And, you know, we want to encourage people to be there and, you know, we'll reach out to you because we need to hear from you. And we're going to spend some time on this. Also, the strategic planning process is going to happen. They've already selected the consulting firm that will be working on the Arts Commission strategic plan. So, you know, Ralph is like going gangbusters. He has big plans, but you have to tell us what it is those plans should be.
Yeah. Thank you. And please join ABBA's mailing list. We don't send too many out, but you'll get information over there too. So thank you. See you all downstairs. And thank you, Denise.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
You're listening to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. Voices of the Community is supported by a grant for the Zellerbach Family Foundation, whose arts and culture grants ensure vibrant work is created, new voices are celebrated, and artists and audiences inclusive of the Bay Area's diverse communities and cultures have opportunities to thrive. To find out more, go to zff.org. And by a grant from the Peaceful World Foundation, dedicated to fostering a culture of global peace through the promotion of hosted conversations and education. You can learn more at peacefulworldfoundation.org.
Hi, this is your host, Issa Nakazawa, reporting with Voices of the Community and BayVac Media here at our studio in SoMa. We are talking to arts and culture leaders as part of the Arts for a Better Bay Area's State of the Arts Summit. And our guest today brings a breadth of knowledge and experience as a longtime activist here in the city, working with children's art programs in Hunters Point, a legislative aide working on policy, supervisor of San Francisco's 5th District, and the current director of the City of San Francisco's Grants for the Arts, Valley Brown. Thank you so much for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you, Issa. I'm really excited to be here.
Me too. It's really an honor. And I know that's an abbreviated biography for all that you've done, so thank you so much. And we just wanted to start with, what is Grants for the Arts? If you can tell us a little bit about who funds it, and then who do you fund?
Yes. So Grants for the Arts is a city department, and we fund arts organizations, parades and festivals. We also fund granting and re-granting, as we say, where, you know, organizations that like to grant out to artists doing things, we also give them money. And what's really different about Grants for the Arts, we're not programmatic. We do not fund programs. We give you general operating support.
Wow. We need that.
Exactly. It's really difficult to get general operating support anywhere. Most foundations, city departments, they fund programmatic. And so we are a special little niche that no matter what you do in the arts, we'll give you operating support, general operating support. So that means you can pay a staff member, you can pay artists, you can pay a stage manager, you can pay your porta potties if you're a festival. So we don't care about that. And who we fund? Most of our organizations, probably about 75% of our organizations are organizations that their budget is under $1 million. So
amazing.
It's small and mini. We call our mini under $500,000, mm-hmm. their annual budget. So those are our biggest our biggest pot of organizations that we fund. But we also fund the large organizations, as we call them, our megas, which is the opera, the ballet, the Museum of Modern Art, Exploratorium. So those, and then everything in between.
Wow. So it's quite comprehensive what you find.
Very comprehensive. Last year, we had 317 applications. It was the largest amount Grants for the Arts have ever received.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. Yes. And we opened it, and we completely restructured and opened up fair granting practices. Mm-hmm. So that really gave people an opportunity that had never had a chance for city funding, and especially through Grants for the Arts, to apply for funding.
Can you elaborate on that for someone who's listening who might not know, like, what is a fair?
So in the last few years, I think we've seen a lot of examples in the city where people were funded or contracts were given out that wasn't a fair granting process.
Okay.
A lot of times people funded, departments would fund organizations that they knew or that was a friend or, and the city has really stepped back and taken a look at these practices, and things have happened because of those practices in the city. So we really changed that model that everything has to be fair. Mm-hmm. And so when you're talking about fair granting process, it means that you open it up for everyone. Mm. So when we have a grant cycle, in the past at Grants for the Arts, if you had received a grant, that you were pretty much guaranteed you would get that grant, right, the next year, which was great for stability.
Right.
But the problem was it locked out a lot of organizations.
Yeah.
And when I came in, it was one of those things you could tell it locked out a lot of organizations, and especially organizations in historically underfunded communities.
Of course.
So we started turning the dial, and they started turning the dial in 2020. And we've just been turning that dial to really address that.
Yeah, I'm curious if like both the pandemic and the racial reckoning was like exacerbating some of those pre-existing kind of inequities in the process, which I think apply across so many sectors that you and I both know as like educators. That happens in schools too, with tenured positions, where it's a complex matter of wanting to provide security and stability, but also wanting to make sure that there isn't kind of any gatekeeping happening for new emerging folks. So I'm curious if those factors exacerbated anything or kind of opened up some of those things for us to look into and dig deep and, like you said, refine and fix.
I think 2020 and a lot of the things that happened in 2020 opened people's eyes up more. And I think with some of the social justice things that were happening, and we were all sitting in our living rooms because it was the pandemic.
Yeah.
And we all started thinking, well, how do we do things and why are we doing those that way, right? Is it the right thing to do? And it started a conversation. And I think that really started a conversation. I know before I became director of Grants for the Arts, in 2020, Grants for the Arts, and was led by Matthew Godet, the former director, he started having listening sessions with the grantees and opened it up to even organizations that had never received a grant from Grants for the Arts, arts organizations. And what they found was that a lot of organizations, especially in historically underfunded communities, felt like they were shut out. That if they did get a grant, it was very small. It never was increased, but they had a hard time getting one.
Right.
And there is only a certain amount of funding. And so I understand that. But after that, in the granting, the next granting cycle, when I came in, but they had already, the application had already come back from all of the grantees when I applicants when I came in. But that's when the things, we started moving that dial and started to look at and score. Grants for the Arts never scored applications before that. It was just like you wrote an application.
Wow.
If they knew you or what or whatever criteria, you would get a grant.
Yeah.
So now we started scoring applications and we started having priorities and letting people know there are priorities that we're looking for and this is how we're scoring.
Right. Like explicit process instead of like implicit bias or relationships.
Exactly. No, the relationships I think were a big one. And I get that. I really get that. We had staff that had worked there a long time that knew a lot of the arts organizations, and that was really important. And they were so supportive of the arts and great people. But, you know, we had to come in and restructure the department. And that meant fair granting process for everyone.
Yeah.
So everyone, every year, it was on an even playing field of you could get a grant.
Before we started the interview, we were talking about the pace of change and how it takes, you know, upwards of 10 years sometimes to see the impact. Do you feel like from where you sit, how do you see the progress in terms of the application or the implementation of these things? Because it is pretty recent, right? Like we're only in 2023 in the summertime. So I'm curious, like, where you feel like we're at in this process.
Well, it's been the last 2 years that we have really turned that dial even more, right? The last two granting cycles.
Got it.
We just finished a granting cycle just recently. We will be announcing end of August the awards. So we have really turned that dial. And I, you know, any kind of bureaucracy, as we were talking before, is so slow and it's very difficult. And I've had a lot of experience with that. Been in the trenches, tried to change things in a city bureaucracy, government bureaucracy. But with this, I feel that, and we had our elected officials also felt it was really important to turn that dial. Turn the dial on equity, turn the dial on community impact, turn the dial on economic impact, and really say, okay, what are we looking for when we fund organizations? How do they, you know, play into our economic impact? Because right now that's huge, our economic impact in the city. And this granting cycle was 50% of your score was your economic impact.
But how then is that also measured? I'm ignorant, so I don't know like how that's qualified or even quantified.
Yeah, how many San Francisco artists are you hiring? How many staff do you have that live in San Francisco? That's a big one because we know that a lot of our artists have left San Francisco because it's so expensive.
And break the fourth wall. Yes.
So we're like, okay, we know that we have a lot of artists from all over that work in the city, that work, you know, are part of our great arts organizations. But we also know that we kind of have to stop the bleeding of San Francisco artists leaving. So how do we do that? We have to make sure they have money to pay for living in San Francisco. That was one of our steps. And then how many events do you have in San Francisco? That was a huge one. We have many organizations that maybe would do one or two events in San Francisco, but then a lot of them travel, and we get that. They travel, they do performances, or they're whatever they do all over. But we had to say, especially right now in this economic situation that San Francisco is in, we had to drill it down to, we're going to fund organizations, or we're going to fund you a certain amount of what you're doing in the city.
Do you feel like that history or that like origin story informs the way that you interact with artists right now, who I'm sure, you know, we're all a little bit disgruntled because we, in a lot of ways, it feels like we're fighting for our lives or fighting for the ability to stay here and mm-hmm. practice. And mm-hmm. so does that give you like a sensitivity when you're, you know, interfacing with grantees?
I think so. I really have always been a big believer, and I did go and work in the city looking at private public housing, and we were looking at artist housing. I'm still very interested in artist housing. I think that the thing with artist housing in this city, because I've been in there, you also need a studio because you can have a little, you know, groovy little loft, but if it's like 500 feet loft, where do you work? I mean, some people can work in that, but well, you need a studio. And I was a welder at the time when I came in. I did metal work. And there was very few places. And I used to actually, there was a City College had their welding school on 4th and Harrison. So I used to go in and just take classes so I could use their studios.
Right.
You know, use their welding machines, use their space. There just isn't anything like that as much anymore. So we really have to think clearly when we think about artist housing. It just doesn't mean a place to live. It also means work. So for me, when I talk to artists and arts organizations about their work, about their funding, I'm very sensitive to it. But I also know that there's a lot of it, there's just so much we can do. In 2008, when we went through the downturn, one of the things I realized is that you cannot just rely on city funding or government funding, because when you hit a downturn or this epidemic that everything shut down and we were funded by hotel tax and we didn't have the money. Right. We were completely pretty much dried up, that you need to have other funding. You need to diversify your funding. So that's one of the messages I want to put out there, is try to diversify your funding, because who would have thunk about this pandemic that we would have been in that situation?
Right.
And we're still millions of dollars short. During 2021, the fiscal year, our mayor, who we have a mayor that's very arts oriented, because that's what she did for 10 years, is ran an art cultural center. So she put in money to pretty much not completely fund grants for the arts, but did a huge chunk of $14 million. And the Board of Supervisors, thank goodness, agreed to let that go through. You have to remember, this was general operating funds, which means it could have been money that went to the homeless, that went to children, that went to seniors. And she took that money and said, no, she really believed that arts and culture is really important in this city, and we have to support that. So she took that money in 21 and said, we're going to give grants for the arts money. But it wasn't as much money as we normally had. So it was hard. It was a difficult 2 years.
It's something I've been sitting with a lot, because we missed you at the State of the Arts Summit, but I was interviewing a lot of arts and culture leaders of the city. And as even myself, I come from like more of a political organizing background. And then I went into the arts because I felt like there wasn't, it's like the bread and roses framework of wanting dignified conditions for all, but understanding that art is also this really key piece to our soul, and that they're more braided and like symbiotic than separate. But I think it's something I'm thinking about a lot right now, because I work in San Francisco. I work at 9th and Mission 3 to 5 times a week. And so I'm confronted with these, like, you know, when it comes to city funding, I'm confronted with the push and pull of priorities mm-hmm. when I do feel oftentimes as an artist that I'm getting funding that's going away from like houseless folks or for going away from direct service, because often we're pit against each other for funding. And they're not, it's not an intersection. They're like, like this, but can you speak to that a little bit? Like, how does that even sit with it within you, even not speaking for Grants for the Arts? Like, how do you find the politics there?
Well, and I agree. It's very, you know, when you're thinking of arts and, you know, programs and what they do, a lot of times you don't think of the economic part of it, yes. especially unless you're like selling tickets and you gotta like, you know, let's get the full house here. But with Prop E, which was the hotel tax that passed with, you know, over 70% vote in the city, that the arts were always not they would have that money from the hotel tax. We wouldn't have to compete and we wouldn't have to say we're taking money away from, you know, homeless services or children's services or elderly services. We wouldn't have to do that anymore. So it takes a little bit of that guilt away from us, right? But no one, like I said, no one knew this pandemic was coming through and that our hotel tax would just be like bottomed out.
Wow.
So that's, but the city leaders really believed, and there was a report that was done that arts and culture is really the economic way back for any city, not only San Francisco, but any city. Mm. And I think for me, I live in the city and I've stayed in the city and, you know, sometimes it's been difficult, but I've stayed in the city because I love being able to get up and walk and, you know, to a freaky festival that's going on that the city supports, or, you know, you can go to a large like carnival or Pride, or you can go to these little organizations that are doing amazing work also.
Right.
And if you have world-class museums and opera and ballet, and you can't really get that unless you're in a city, right?
Right.
And we have people come to the city for that. And not only people, artists that travel and to work in the city, because this is the place to work. Mm-hmm. So I really believe that arts and culture is our way back economically. I really believe that wholeheartedly. And I just feel that, you know, we should be supporting our arts and culture as much as we can, because I feel that this is going to bring people into the city, whether that's tourism, people from the Bay Area, or just getting us out of our sweatpants that live around here, you know, and out from our computer and unplug our Netflix IV and get out. So I really, truly believe that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've been interviewing local artists more in this neighborhood, and we've been talking about like a lot of arts organizers feel this pressure to stay hybrid for really profound reasons, like accessibility and trying to be, you know, very responsive to the realities. But I also feel like with the live, there's something about coming together in person that's also essential to community. Like for me, you can have digital communities, you can have these hybrid communities, and they're not distinct from, but I mm-hmm. think without events or without live activations, we're still pretty alienated and isolated, and it's not necessarily helping us reconnect.
No.
To even ourselves. Agreed. Yeah.
Agreed.
And I know you were going to speak at the State of the Art Summit about Prop E, and mm-hmm. You just kind of went into it, but like, what is the kind of the state of it right now? And I know you were going to share a little bit more in depth about it at the State of the Art Summit. Like, is there anything left for you to share about it or where it stands?
Yeah, and I'm so sorry and disappointed I missed the State of the Art Summit, but you would not have wanted me there. I was sick. I didn't have a voice.
Oh, no.
No voice. No. But I was a mess. And so I really was disappointed to miss it. A lot of my friends and colleagues were there, and I heard it was great. But yes, Prop E. So, you know, we're still not where we were. And a lot of it's because of conventions and those things coming into town and staying at hotels. We're better than we were a year ago, better than we were 2 years ago. Mm. But we still don't have where we were in like 2019. This year, the city had said to us, you have to fund just on Prop E, because they had been giving us some general funds. You know, they gave us a huge chunk of general fund. And then last year that we had some. Mm. But this year, they're like, because of all the needs and things that are happening, they said you need to like live within your means kind of thing. And so you have this much money to grant out, which was about $14 million, which is a lot lower, but it's something that we have to do. There's just no way around it. And Prop E still gives us that guaranteed that as long as we don't have another catastrophe where we don't have visitors here going into hotels, it still gives us that guarantee we're going to have funding, some kind of funding, but we have to prioritize.
Got it. And can you speak to the Proposition E, the Arts Impact Endowment funding component that I know is informed by a lot of the, you know, community arts folks? So like, how do they get involved and informed in that process?
Well, I think there's different things, there's different places to go. For me and our department is where, you know, we keep a temperature on where the funding is on Prop E, right? And what we need to do. I know that John Moscone and others have been really being activists to organize people, to get them to push for certain funding and push for priority funding. For us, I mean, as a city funder, I step back a bit, but I also look for other ways that we can get funding, whether that is state funding, federal funding, all of those things that I think that would be really helpful. And I know there's different groups and you can get online and look for those that if people want to get involved in that. We always need people like, you know, we had lined up people to speak when we were looking at getting fund, you know, trying to get the general fund for what was 2 years ago. And no one even had to speak because we, all the board of supervisors at that meeting, at the budget meeting said, yeah, let's do that. But you have to get ready to be that activist, maybe go to the state to really like, you know, reach out to our national, our federal leaders, you know, our Nancy Pelosi or Dianne Feinstein, all of them to say, we really want you to push this initiative and funding. I think those are things that there are groups that are getting that together and making sure that people have that opportunity to put their voice in there. Because the arts has always been a target, and especially you get certain groups and certain political figures in that they take a swipe at the arts.
Right.
That thinks we're, you know, anybody that's involved in the arts are, you know, not the kind of people they want to vote.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It was really a pleasure.
Yeah, I really appreciate
yes,
it.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Voices of the Community. You've been listening to the voices of Joe Landini, the founder and director of giving at Safe House Arts, Anay Patel, the executive director of the Asian Pacific Islander Cultural Center, Denise Pate, the Director of Community Investments for the San Francisco Arts Commission, Valley Brown, the Director of the City of San Francisco's Grants for the Arts, and our co-host, Issa Nakazawa, the Director of Community Engagement for BAVAC Media. To find out more information about our guests and their respective organizations, programs, services, how to volunteer, and make a donation, go to voicesofthecommunity.com and click on the link to the Arts and Culture series and Episode 7. Today's episode was made possible through our co-production partnership with Arts for a Better Bay Area for their State of the Arts Summit, along with our amazing technical crew, the audio and video wizard and our associate producer, Eric Estrada, and our co-production partner, BAVAC Media, and their wonderful staff, Paula Argoni, Andy Konami, Issa Nakazawa, and Javon Giles. The graphic magic was made possible by Casey Nance from Citron Studios. We also want to thank our broadcast partners KSFP, LPFM 102.5 FM, KPCA, LPFM 103.3 FM, Petaluma Community TV, and BAVAC Media. Voices of the Community is supported by a grant from the Zillabock Family Foundation, whose arts and culture grants ensure vibrant work is created, new voices are celebrated, and artists and audiences inclusive of the Bay Area's diverse communities and cultures have opportunities to thrive. To find out more, go to zff.org and buy a grant from the Peaceful World Foundation, dedicated to fostering a culture of global peace through the promotion of hosted conversations and education. You can learn more at peacefulworldfoundation.org.
Take us along on your next walk, workout, or drive by subscribing to Voices of the Community on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast. And if you've been enjoying the show, please leave us a rating and review on the podcast platform of your choice. To watch past and future episodes of Voices of the Community, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and go to youtube.com/GeoCoster. We'd love to hear from you with feedback and show ideas, so send us an email to george@georgecoster.com. I'm George Coster from San Francisco, and thank you for listening and watching today's episode.